and running on a Thursday morning here on The Fan. It's Gordon Damer, your overnight oasis, taking you up until 5 o'clock and the warm-up show. Of course, the number, you know, 888-808-1019. Lots to get into, plenty to talk about. The NFL draft is 2 weeks away. It's still 2 weeks away, but I believe that we have identified the dumbest draft take, at least so far. We still got 2 weeks. Maybe somebody can top it, but this is a doozy. So we'll see if we can lay out why it is the dumbest draft take so far and whether or not anybody's going to top it in the 2 weeks leading up to the NFL draft. We'll get into the Knicks some, with the playoffs right around the corner, facing off against the Celtics. But where we got to start is obviously with the baseball. And it's a case of good news and bad news. Sometimes I say to my wife, you want the good news or you want the bad news? The bad news for the baseball locals, Mets lose yesterday. The good news is, for Yankee fans, the Yankees lost yesterday. And for a sizable portion of the Yankee fan base, that's the time they enjoy more. They enjoy it more when the team loses. Not necessarily important games, not necessarily must-win games late in the season, but they don't want too much positivity. They don't want too many things going well. It's good that they're in first place, but any loss is a big deal. Sure, it's April, what, 10th, 9th, whatever it is today. I can't keep track. But there's a sizable portion of the Yankee fan base that they're comfortable. You know, like there's certain people, they like to watch TV shows that they've seen before because there's comfort viewing it, right? You watch the same shows at night, if it's The Office, if it's Sopranos, whatever it is, because there's comfort in the familiarity. And for a certain sizable portion of the Yankee fan base, when they lose a game, like they lost last night to the A's 3-2, it gives them the chance to point out all the flaws. It's harder to point out all those flaws when they're winning. And they've mostly been winning so far this year. They are in first place. And outside of the Dodgers, right now, as we speak, in this current moment, on April 9th, the Yankees, second best record in baseball. But nobody wants to deal with that. Let's talk about the flaws. But I'm going to try to make it seem like, I think that what actually is going on with the Yankees, that they're playing 4D chess right now. They are operating at a higher level than the typical fan base is looking at it right now. Because when you watch last night and you watch the games this year, if you're looking for the negative, right? You will point to bottom half of the lineup, right? 7, 8, 9. And really, if you want to single it out to one specific person, it would be hard not to single out the performance so far of Ryan McMahon. Now, if you've listened to me at any point last year when they made the trade, at any point, I was never a fan of Ryan McMahon because I said to you, and this is not debatable, Ryan McMahon has never been an average player in Major League Baseball. He's never been a mediocre player in Major League Baseball. He is, for every season that he has played, and he's 31 years old, I believe this is his 9th or 10th season, he has been a below-average offensive player. Despite the fact that he's played this long, despite the fact that he played all of his games, but he played as a member of the Colorado Rockies, so he's playing his home games at Coors Field, he has never been a good offensive player. And I will also point out, for the Yankee fans who like to scream about Aaron Boone lied to your face last night because he was asked about Ryan McMahon, and he said, we know he's a good offensive player. No, he's not. No, he is not. He has never been a good offensive player. The best you could say about Ryan McMahon is, at times, in some seasons, he's been close to mediocre. He's been close to average. That's the best that you can say about it. But I think what the Yankees are doing right, they might be playing 4D chess. Because if you ever wanted to create a scenario, and this was going to be very difficult to do, create a scenario where Yankee fans would be happy to see Anthony Volpe and his return, what you've gotten, or really what you've not gotten, out of Ryan McMahon would pave that way. Because he is so lost at the point. Now, I was not expecting much out of Ryan McMahon this year, but even with my low expectation, oh my God, he's been even worse than I expected. He could not hit a beach ball with a shed door right now, standing at the plate. He's just not a good hitter. He's never been a good hitter. He's not going to be a good hitter now. Amazing how quickly those... Remember those stories in spring training? To show you how meaningless spring training is. Remember those stories in spring training? They're working with his batting stance. I think they were shortening up his stance in the box, and that was going to pay dividends. I don't know. Go back to what you were doing. You were better before. You were never good, but you were better before. But I think that if there's a way that the Yankees could... And look, the Yankees like to create soft landings, right? They like to prop up their players. They don't want too many hard questions. They don't want any controversy. They give their players courses on how not to really say anything inflammatory that's going to lead to... So I think that what they're doing right now is they've concocted a scenario where when Anthony Volpe is ready to come and play on a semi-regular basis, Yankee fans will be almost happy to see him. And I will say, while I don't have at this stage much confidence that Anthony Volpe is ever going to be the player that the Yankees thought that he was going to turn out to be, I will say Anthony Volpe has a far better chance of being a productive player than Ryan McMahon ever has. Ryan McMahon is 31. He's never, again, go through the stats. He's never been a above average player offensively. He's a good glove. That's fine. He can catch the ball. He can field it. He can throw. Fantastic. Can't hit a lick. And this year so far has been the worst of it. And I would assume at some point he's got to be better than this, right? I mean, is this one of those movies where the person loses all their skill overnight? Is this one of those body swapping movies from the 80s where somebody else's, his son has taken his place and he's never played baseball before? That's what it seems like. It seems like he has no ability to put the bat on the ball. Now, it's still very early, but the track record is the track record. So even if he does have a hot streak, even if he does run into one every once in a while, he will not be an average offensive player. Will not. We know that. He's 31 years old. At least Anthony Volpe, whenever he does come back, the track record is there, the track record as well. But at least he's young. At least maybe there, you know, 4 years, sometimes it takes guys a little bit longer. Who knows? There's certainly more uncertainty when it comes to Anthony Volpe than there is with Ryan McMahon. And why exactly the Yankees are moving Ryan McMahon to shortstop? He's just as bad offensively at shortstop as he is at third base. Like, what does it matter? What does it matter? So I think the Yankees very well might be putting a plan in place so that when Anthony Volpe, he has that soft landing. Because look, the last thing you want to have happen is the Yankees roll off a whole bunch of wins, playing really, really well like they have been, and then Anthony Volpe comes back, and for any reason they start losing games, because who's going to be the whipping boy at that point? We all know it's going to be Anthony Volpe. So if you have someone go out there on a nightly basis, a daily basis, and cannot hit at all, like Ryan McMahon has looked completely lost at the plate, it sets up a fantastic scenario for the babyface to walk in the door. And if he gets, Anthony Volpe could get one hit a week, and at this point he'd be outperforming Ryan McMahon. It would not be hard. I saw that Ryan McMahon has an actual average. He's hitting 077. I got to be honest, watching him at the plate, I look at 077, well, it seems kind of high. I don't remember. Where did this hit come from? He's also slugging 077, which is also not good. So if you want to call up about Ryan McMahon, by all means, you can. Now, I will tell you this, and I'm kind of joking about the 4D chess. What I'm not joking about, Ryan McMahon's not going anywhere. So you can call up and you can yell and you can scream, how are the Yankees going to keep the, they got to get rid of, first off, no team is getting rid of anybody in April. Nobody's getting rid of a piece that is making $16 million. They're not cut. Even as bad as Ryan McMahon has been, and you can make the argument, he's been about as bad as you can be offensively. Nobody's getting rid of a player like that in April. They're not getting rid of that guy in May. So he's gonna be on the roster because who wants him? He's making $16 million this year and $16 million next year. So he's not going anywhere. He is going to be here. Now, maybe at some point he will transition to be simply a defensive replacement late in games. I don't know. But he's not getting traded anywhere. The Yankees aren't going to eat that money. They're not traded. He's not going anywhere. He's going to be here. So I would just say, look away. Shield your eyes when he's at the plate. Maybe they got to come up with some sort of little fun thing on Yes where they don't actually show his at bat. It's that, guess that former Yankee. Maybe they could throw that in there during the Ryan McMahon at bat. Something. Because it is hard to watch. It is hard to watch. Now, in terms of the rest of the lineup and the concerns that maybe people have about the bottom of the lineup, it's not carrying its weight. I think that that's going to resolve itself over time. I know that people have started to throw Jazz Chisholm's name into the mix there. Oh, Jazz is not holding up. And certainly when he makes the brain fart the other day, certainly doesn't help his case. And I would just want to remind Jazz, if he's listening, looking at the 50-50 prediction that he made for the start of the season, still 50 home runs shy. So we're still a little shy on the home runs. He's got 4 stolen bases, so he's making his way on the stolen bases. But if he wants to get going on the home runs, any time would be a good time. And in case you're wondering, in terms of the countdown, still at 50. So I think the Jazz is eventually going to figure it out. I would be surprised if he's not going to have a typical Jazz Chisholm type year. So I don't think that you can really lump him in to the equation at the bottom of the order. The one that's surprising, and at some point, you do have to wonder if whether or not he's ever going to get to the player that you thought he was going to be, and that's Austin Wells. You know, when Austin Wells was coming up, he was actually thought of, oh, well, he's going to be a good hitter, but can he field the position? Well, it's actually turned out to be the reverse of that. He can field the position pretty well. He does, you know, all the different aspects of catching in the modern game with dealing with the pitchers and dealing with the ABS and the pitch comm and all the different types of stuff, pitch shapes and all this type. He deals with that fine. Offensively, though, you have to start to wonder of whether or not this guy is ever going to be even. And look, you don't need him to be a middle of the order bat. You would just simply like for him to be slightly above average. But the more time that goes into this, and when he first came up, it seemed like he had a pretty good stroke and it seemed like he had a pretty good approach at the plate. But that seems to have vanished here over last year and at least at the start of this season. So whether or not that return, and that would go a long way to fixing the problems of the bottom of the order. You know, like I always say, like the things you have to, and it won't really show itself during the regular season. The Yankees have had plenty of times during the regular season where they have a top-heavy lineup, and they're able to kind of cover that up during the regular season because of the greatness of the top half of that order, especially a couple of years ago when they had Judge and Soto, but even last year with Bellinger and Jazz chipping in and the rest of the top half of that order, the year that Chisholm had. But if you could ever get Austin Wells to kind of give you something offensively, I'm not asking to be an all-star catcher, but can you be slightly above league average? Can you give me an OPS plus of 105? That would go a long way to kind of fixing those problems. And those problems really rear their head come playoff time. You know, if you have a weakness in your order, if you have guys at the bottom of the order that cannot give you productive at-bats, teams are going to exploit that. And I think that that's what happened. And it puts more pressure on the top half of the lineup. You know, when everybody else is kind of chipping in, it takes the pressure off the main stars. Because every team's got main stars. Every team that makes the playoffs has good hitters in the middle of the lineup. It's what can the rest of the lineup do? And unfortunately for the Yankees, a lot of times in the postseason, they get exploited at the bottom half of that lineup. And that's why I think it's an issue that bears watching. And the key one to me, it's not Ryan McMahon, because he's never going to be good. It's not Jazz Chisholm, because I think that he will figure things out over time. It's the questionable guys. It's the questionable guys. And one of those questionable guys, unfortunately, is Austin Wells. Because if that guy could ever figure it out enough to give you something offensively, that would go a long way to fixing a lot of the problems, regular season and the postseason. 888-808-1019 is the telephone number, 888-808-1019. Let's get some phone calls in. We'll start things off with Moose is in Jamaica. Moose, what's going on, my man?
Morning. Good Moose. Morning. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on, Moose?
Good to hear. I'm going to not talk Yankees because it's early in the season.
Come on, it's already April 9th. This is crisis time, Moose. What are you talking about?
Ridiculous to set the world on fire for one loss in April. Ridiculous. I'm not losing sleep over it. So I want to talk Jets and Giants draft.
Sure.
Because of the chatter that we're so close to it. So, you know, the anticipation and the nerves are heavy and people are thinking, speculating, coming up with picks, selections, and trades.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to say one thing about the Giants. Anybody in the Giants organization or any rational fan that is saying Jeremiah Love should be selected at 5, if available, is obviously not taking into consideration the needs that the team, the Giants, have, which is primarily shutdown corner, wide receiver opposite Malik Nabers, and possibly a number one target until he is fully recovered from the injury and whatnot. And if they can, a linebacker, because you don't know what you're getting from Micah McFadden with another year-long injury. Right. But for the Jets, this is the thing I really want to discuss. Right. Regardless of who you take it to, taking a quarterback with the early second round pick is probably a mistake, considering the season is not going to go well in 2026. So you really want to just ride with Geno Smith. And whatever comes from that, the losses, the wins, you take it as growing pains, and then you select your franchise quarterback in 27. I know they said in 25 that would be a great quarterback draft. It really wasn't. They said in 26, in 25, that 26 would be great. It's currently not. So we'll see about 27. But if you are going to take a quarterback, because it is a need, you need to fill the roster. I've been there. Drew Allard, who was a Heisman contender, could have been a top 10 quarterback last year, decided to go back to school. If you can get him in the third or fourth round or trade back into the third round to select him and just have him at the end of the season to see what you have, if the season's lost with Geno, and the inexperienced defense, even though you added pieces, I think Drew Allard is primarily a good selection in the third round for the Jets at quarterback.
See, Moose, you know, and here's the thing, and thanks for the phone call. I don't understand what that accomplishes by taking a prospect in the draft this year for the Jets if the plan is to take that guy in 2027. Now, if there's a guy that you like that you think is the franchise guy in this draft, like if the Jets brain trust thinks that Ty Simpson is the guy long term, well, then go get that guy. Fine. But if you just don't take a guy just to take a guy. Like the story that the Jets gave you based on how last year went was there's just such a lack of talent that we have to tear this down even further. It wasn't like they were building anything anyway. but they had to turn it, they had to tear it down even more. So if that's the case, and the plan is 2027 is the draft for quarterbacks, I don't know that Aaron Glenn's going to make it there. I don't know that Darren Mooji, but if that's the plan, well, then stick to the plan. Go out, especially if you're Darren Mooji, go out there and hit home runs with each of the picks that you have in those first 2 days. You got two ones, you got two twos. Go out there and show me that you can scout and then draft foundational players. And if that's the case, well, that's the best way of convincing me that, you know what, this guy's the right guy. You know, what they did in free agency isn't that. Doing what they did at the trade deadline last year of trading away young all-pro type players to get draft picks, that's the easy part. Whether the Jets are ever going to turn it around, whenever that is, it's because they've been able to identify players in the draft, draft those players, and develop those players. So I would not be in favor of drafting a young quarterback just as a possibility, right? Like the old thing about you draft a quarterback every year because if you hit on that, you've hit a home run. I don't think that the Jets are really in that kind of position. Now, what worries me or would worry me if I were a Jet fan is that you're sitting with Geno as one quarterback, and when that initial report came out, it seemed like they were going after two veteran guys. The initial report was Geno and Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is off the board. He's in Minnesota. So how well, like, if Geno is bad, and there's a good possibility Geno's going to be bad, well, then what's the backup plan to Geno? I would think that there's at least a possibility that they're going to add another quarterback either through the draft or that somebody's on a roster right now and have like the young upside kind of guy. Tanner McKee's name has been mentioned at times this offseason. Mac Jones's name has been mentioned at times this offseason. If you're telling me you got Geno as your starter, I really wouldn't want another veteran guy behind him. I'd like so if that's the case and you have to give up a second round pick to get one of those guys, even though they're not really proven, Jones more than McKee, the Jets have the ability to figure out a way to come up with an extra second round pick. I would much prefer that way to go. Somebody who's got some NFL experience, and I'm not relying on the Jets exclusively to develop this guy in what is almost an impossible situation, right? Like, whoever, if say they draft somebody with the first pick of the second round, or they get a third round pick and they draft somebody in the third round, and Geno over the first 2 months of the season is like he was with the Raiders, terrible, leading the league in interceptions, you know, a complete mess because he's walking into a very difficult situation once again. If that's the case, who are you turning to? I would like to think you have somebody with a little bit of upside, somebody that you might be able to get something out of rather than just another guy who's on his last legs, is another veteran guy who's been around the league and is playing on his last contract. Because if that's the case, if the Jets go into this year and there's not some sizable improvement, that's a really bad sign, not just for the coach, but for the GM too. You won three games. You were the second worst team in the league last year, and you kind of folded up shop over the last 2 months of the year. So if you're actually going to play this out and there's actual pressure on you to show, like if you can't show improvement from being the second worst team in the league to somewhat more promising, I'm not even saying a number, just somewhat more promising. To me, the number would be six. Go get six wins. Figure out a way to get six wins in the course of next season. You'll still have a very high draft pick. There's going to be a lot of quarterbacks in the draft next year. You can get your guy then. But to me, drafting anyone this year, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And then if you are able to go get a Mac Jones or a Tanner McKee and your plan is, hey, I'm going to get somebody in 2027, well, then you don't have to throw that guy that you draft in 2027 to the Wolves right away because you have someone who has played the position somewhat in the NFL before. Figure out who that person is. And if you have to kind of overpay to get that guy, again, a second-round pick, the Jets have so many picks here. over the next couple of years. And I realize the three number ones, they're kind of off the board. Right, you're going to hold on to the three number ones next year. Those are your prize possessions. I get it. But you have to be able to maneuver away with all these picks you have this year and next year to be able to secure the most important position. There's no position on the Jets that is at a lower state than the quarterback position that has that level of importance. Now, you might think, like, does anyone honestly think that Geno is going to start every single game for the Jets next year? Honestly? After what you just saw with him with the Raiders? Because if he's bad again, like he was with the Raiders, well, then we're going to get into the tank talk again because they're going to have these three number ones in the draft. And, you know, the problem with the three number ones, or at least the way that people are perceiving the three number ones, is, well, we'll be able to trade those picks and get up further in the... No. Not, the only way you'll be able to do that is if there's a team at the top of the draft who's already got their quarterback locked in. They're happy with their quarterback. They have a franchise quarterback, but somehow they finished with a bottom four or five record. That's the only time that trading the... Because if you're one of those teams that doesn't have a quarterback, you're not... What good does three number ones do me if I still don't have my quarterback? So the Jets are in a very, very difficult position. Now, as far as the Giants, I've been saying for a while that... And what's interesting this week, Jets and Giants related, Peter Schrager came out with his mock draft. Who else came out with their mock drafts this week? There were like three of them. Daniel Jeremiah came out with one, and somebody else came out with theirs. And they had the Jets. They all had the Jets taking the defensive lineman from Texas Tech, Bailey, David Bailey. And it seemed like it was locked in to Arvell Reese. I even said on Saturday, if you see a mock draft that doesn't have the Jets taking Arvell Reese, forget about it. So when you see guys that are that locked in, Peter Schrager coming in, did Diana Russini come out with hers? I don't think so. She's been busy doing other things. But if you see mock drafts, you have to kind of pay attention, especially Schrager's is generally, in terms of hit rate, one of the better ones that you find. The only problem with that is the books have not moved. Like the betting odds that I have seen with a couple of different books, they still have Arvell Reese, the heavy favorite, to the Jets at number two. So I don't know if all those guys are getting their information from the same source. I don't know what the deal is behind the scenes, but it has not moved the market, so to speak. And usually those kind of guys, if those guys are getting information that's true, then you would think that the people who are operating the sports books would also have access to that kind of information, and the betting odds would change instantly. And at least as of yesterday, that was not the case. What's very odd is when I'm in Jersey, my betting apps allow me to bet on the NFL draft I have. But when I'm in New York, when I come to the studio, they're not available. Why would that be? That's very strange to me. The draft is not taking place in New York. They're not I know they're New York teams, but they don't actually play in New York. Very odd that the markets would not be available during when you're in New York as opposed to in New Jersey. So that's one thing in terms of the Jets. I still think that Arvell Reese is going to be the pick at number two. I would prefer Bailey because I think that there's less development needed, right? Like everybody says, Reese has a higher ceiling, but you're going to have to kind of coach him up a little bit. He's not as refined as Bailey is. For me, if I were like the last thing I want if I'm a Jet fan is don't blow this pick. So I want the guy. He might not have the highest ceiling, but I have a safer floor with Bailey because he looks the part. You just plug him in. He's a pass rusher. You can never have enough of those guys. And the Jets were, I think, if they were not worst in sacks last year, they were pretty close to worst in sacks. So if that's the case, that's one like that. We got four picks on the first 2 days. Nail those four picks for sure, and then you'll be on a far better footing moving forward. So I think Bailey, I don't think he's going to be a bust. Reese, higher ceiling, but I think that there's a little bit more of uncertainty in terms of his NFL prospects. And let's be honest, when you're dealing with the Jets, you have to almost prepare for the worst. You almost have to expect what could possibly go wrong and then fully expect that to happen. So I would be going more Bailey than Reese, but we will find out here in a couple of weeks. With the Giants, there was a real push there for a while that it seemed like Jeremiah Love was going to be the guy. A lot of the insiders were touting that, and it kind of tracked because going into the offseason, plenty of reports that Giants were going to pursue running backs in free agency, and then the Jeremiah Love talk started to happen as well. But that has kind of cooled. So it does not. Now, part of it cooled because it seemed like the Titans were going to take Love at four. At least that's what the betting odds have been. And they remain that way. But now, at last time I checked, Love wasn't even the second choice in terms of betting options for the Giants. But it would be more fascinating if he is even still on the board at number five, right? Like if he's off the board, it kind of takes the question out of it because he's not available to the Giants. But it does seem like now the pick, and this was the pick that I thought originally would be Sonny Styles. That's the betting favorite now. We'll see if the next 2 weeks it remains that way. But, you know, for a draft that does not have the prototypical big stars, the big quarterbacks, it feels like 1, 2, 4, and 5. 3, the Cardinals is still kind of up in the air a little bit, but the first 4 of the first 5 picks seem like they're kind of locked in. That could change, but with 2 weeks to go, it would be kind of surprising to me unless we get to draft night. There'll be some talk then, and things start to get a little hairy, but I would say if there's actual debate between the Jets after all this time of who they're actually taking at number 2, boy, oh boy, that's not a good sign. That's not, because they've known basically since the draft was finalized that when they had the second pick, they knew who was going number 1. So for them still to be debating if that's a possibility, going back and forth between Reese and Bailey, boy, oh boy, that's a bad sign.